This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 238, brought to you by InStock Trades and iFanboy listeners like you.
I was a teenage anarchist, looking for revolution. I had the style, I had the ambition, read all the authors. There was a war, but the class war, I was ready to set the world on fire. I was a teenage anarchist, looking for revolution. Do you remember when you were young and you wanted to set the world on fire? Do you
remember? Hey! Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 238. Yeah, that's right. I'm back. I'm Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
I'm scared, Josh.
And Josh Flanagan.
It's good to have you back, Ron.
Thanks. There could be some changes around here at iFanboy.com. It's a what website all about comics. I can't do it. I can't hold it. I'm sorry. It's a website all about comics, and we read comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and then one of us picks the book that we deem was the pick of the week, and we come back here to discuss that comic, as well as other comics and anything else of note. We want to warn you that we're going to be talking about what happens in the book, so we're gonna talk about the spoilers, you know, the spoiling things. So if you haven't read your books, be careful. You might want to press pause and come back. I'm going to go in and out of that accent. You won't ever know when it's coming.
Is it because you spent time out of the country? You're getting back to your roots?
It is, yeah. Actually, yeah. Well, I stopped at home in Long Island, and it kind of kicked back in, and you know how that goes. It's good to be back, though. Wow. Whew. I still haven't listened to last week's show yet, though, because I didn't read my books from last weekend. So, because I got screwed at the store this Wednesday. The vacation double week? Oh, that's awful.
Yeah, that's
Connor
bad.
Knows exactly what you're talking about.
I had like a $90 week when I came back from
vacation. 111.
Yes.
So, yeah, miserable.
Good work.
You miserable, you motherfucker. Anyway, so this week, luckily, I didn't have the pick of the week because I was getting back into the groove after my vacation, but Connor did.
My pick of the week was a shocking pick. It was Captain America number 606. Shocking, probably because we've all three of us have been pretty much down on this book for a while.
This was the issue. I said, this issue better be good or I'm dropping it.
And this was historically one of our favorites. And it was my top five and it was Josh's top five. And for years, this has been one of our favorite books. But then I really do feel like it's been an aimless struggle ever since they put Bucky into the suit. It's like they almost didn't have a story after that. The story was to get him to the suit, and then ever since he's been in the suit, there's been no real theme to the story.
It was just this sort of endless characterization with no story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There was just stuff happening to him, which was kind of good character building, but there was nothing intriguing by way of the plot.
You never really had an idea of why they did it. Why was he in the suit? Why are we doing this? You know, the obvious parallel is the Batman situation, and there's been an exploration at least into why. Whereas here, there really hasn't been a why. There hasn't been a story to really focus on that. And not that this issue did that, but what this issue did, I thought really well, was recapture the feeling from those old issues. And it's almost hard to explain. It was just, it felt different. It felt newer. I think the art change really helped.
Hugely.
Yeah, for me it almost bought, like I'm not as clued into the whole Bucky why and the stuff you're talking to, but it's been the art that's been the hardest thing for me.
Yeah, Butch Geiser Geese is the he inks most of the time, but he also pencils sometimes. He penciled that Ultimate Origins mini a while back, and he's a pro. He's been in the industry for years, and he does the pencils here. And it's a little cleaner. He does a great job of storytelling.
It felt a lot like when I was looking at the art, like it felt like 70s Marvel. It was like
it has that 70s feel. It definitely
Kirby,
does. Yeah.
Kirby, Buscema, John Burst. Yeah,
Steranko, like, big time Steranko. Yeah,
yeah. I saw that right away as I was reading, and it was like I was like, ooh, this makes me happy.
Yeah, and then I think one of the things we've had a big problem with ever since Epting left was the fill-ins I think they've tried to ape his style, and it's come off really stiff. And we're here. You know, he's not trying to copy anybody. He's drawing the way he draws, and it works out really well. Also, Dean White's the colorist. I don't know how long he's been coloring, but the fact that it's not Frank D'Armada's color scheme, which we've had for, you know,
however many
years.
Issues, we can't tell because they renumbered it.
Dean White's no slouch, though.
No, what I'm saying is good. It leads to a break of style. It looks like a different book.
Yeah.
I thought the same thing that you wrote, because the D'Armada colors worked really well with the Epting stuff at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that worked and that they didn't when Luke Ross's was sort of the low point of it. And Luke Ross is not bad. He's been good on stuff, but it wasn't working in this. But in this, there was just the palette was just upped a little bit. They took out that sort of overlay of gray and everything. Yeah. And it really made it come alive.
Big, white, bright panels in here. And it really helped to keep sort of differentiate. And I liked the classicness of the story. It felt old school, like Josh said. They're bringing Baron Zemo Jr. is back, and he's the son of the original Baron Zemo. And he's the one who shot the rocket off that Cap and Bucky tried to stop that blew up Cap and sent him into the Arctic and supposedly killed Bucky. And so now you've got sort of not Bucky's arch nemesis, but someone tied into his history. Even if it's not the original guy, it's his son. And now he finds out that, this is Bucky in the suit and I have to kill him. And he starts enacting his plan. It just seemed very simple and straightforward, and not in a bad way. And I didn't want to call it getting back to basics because it's such an overused comic book discussion cliche, but it kind of felt like that.
Look at the scenes from the bar, the Brooklyn Bridge bar, and it's like they're all dressed like they're in the 70s too.
Yeah.
Everything is from the 70s. A woman with a large afro.
Yeah.
And that's kind of great. I like how this is the most Guido that Bucky has ever been. Look at him. I also
he
like
a weird stripe on his shirt.
It's like a bowling shirt. It's like a Paul Dini shirt.
It is.
Yeah.
It's Tony Soprano's whimsical shirt. And does Black Widow always keep a supply of roses for when she leaves?
Okay, well here's the
she
thing.
She leaves a lot, though.
Well, here's the thing about that, is that what I found interesting, last time we saw Bucky was living in Steve's Brooklyn, you know, Inviso apartment, and that got blown up at the end of Dark Reign. And now he's in this new beautiful apartment with this, with a workout room and the supply of roses. What? When did that? I want the annual of Bucky finding real estate.
I think they built it in Brooklyn in the same place.
You think it's in the same place?
I think it's the same place.
But that's
place.
A Victorian window in the bedroom.
Also, by the way, I'm going to tell you the difference between a superhero and me. So I wake up in the middle of the night, and the beautiful Russian spy that I've been sleeping with is gone. Mm. And I've never thought, no point in going back to sleep. It's time to break out the new workout room. No, I might make bacon. I'm definitely not going to go into the new workout.
You know what?
Room.
I thought the page of Bucky's
dream, many differences.
The page of Bucky's dream was really nice. That was that was very Steranko, very seven like
yes.
70.
This,
like,
this
that
is a total
really
70s feel to it. Yeah. I think what this comic did also really well was it told you everything you need to know about the characters in this within the context of the story. So if you're jumping on now, you can do it with this issue.
This is a good jumping on point.
If you left the book, you can come back here. It tells you about Bucky and Natasha. It tells you about Falcon. It tells you about Cap. It tells you about Baron Zemo. But none of it ever feels like anybody's speaking to you, the reader. It all happens really organically in the story.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really – it was very elegant. It was very well done. It just felt like Captain America from 3 years ago.
You know what this had?
What?
Steve Rogers.
Yes. And yeah. That's even, if Steve Rogers,
even if Steve Rogers isn't Captain America in this, you know,
it feels right when Rigger's writing him.
Right, that, but like having the relationship between Steve and Bucky, I think, is what made the book so special for so long.
Yeah.
Maybe. Might be a thing. Also, Baron Zemo wears a mask over his mask.
That was my favorite moment of the week. I couldn't forget how to put that into the best week panels without it. Didn't really. He needed multiple panels to explain it, but Baron Zemo comes into the criminal and insane ward, addressed, you know, like a man, and he pulls off the man mask to his Baron Zemo mask with the little helmet parts, not just the mask.
Yeah. I love Baron Zemo. I don't know what it is about him, but there's something. I don't know if it's the little halo, the little crown, or the purple mask, or what. But I love Baron Zemo.
I also love
that he went and picked up, you know, henchmen that were having bar fights. I mean, this just felt so right.
Yeah. I like that he went to a bar where apparently like a World War I German general hangs out and he gets in a fight in a bartender who was wearing actual lederhosen.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing about this book is I loved it. I gave it a 5 stars. First 5 star I've given to Captain America forever. There's so much goofy about it. It doesn't make sense that we can sit here like this is nitpicking, but it's like nitpicking for fun. Like you loved it and you're like, that doesn't make sense. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I love it.
Well, I wrote that in my review that it's weird because Brubaker is so serious in so much of his work, and like Criminals, deadly serious, but he seems to really love that whimsical stuff.
Yeah,
because he seeds it into these stories. It's always there. I mean, Arnim Zola is wacky.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yet he made him a focus for a long time. I think he's got a love for that era. And they put those books.
I will nitpick though, not like for fun, but for serious. But I don't like how this spoiled a little bit of what's going on in Thunderbolts, in that because Baron Zemo's got Fixer with him.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know if it spoiled anything as much as confused me. Like I was like, I just think that they're in danger of running into Norman Osborn territory.
Yep.
If they're going to be telling two stories with the same character at the same time, and just those divergences they're doing it at the same time, those divergences make it difficult.
And Josh, I had asked Connor this earlier, but did you have a printing error on yours? It's been bugging the crap out of me. I just saw it. The title page where Bucky's jumping and it says no escape vertically, like the title page, it looks like it was supposed to be a 2-page spread, but I got a Honda ad on the other side.
I don't think it was because there's no other side from it.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's like
you think the other page would be somewhere else in the book. It was an oddly constructed page.
Yeah, because I was weird. Where's the rest of Falcon's body?
That's weird. I hadn't noticed that, but I don't think it's an error. I think it's just
Falcon shouldn't have been in the panel. She should have been Cap.
Yeah, I agree.
Although the next 2-page spread, the fight, I think that's the highlight of this issue.
Yeah.
I just think this is a wonderful, wonderful page. When you talk about just classic superhero fight storytelling, like this is just that one thing where Cap is going around the pole and sort of bends his legs around him. That reminds me of all my favorite comic books when I was growing up, like the things that I loved about comics, that just that kind of thing.
It felt so good to read this issue.
Yeah.
You know, when I was done with it, it's like a good Captain America again.
I was pissed that now I can't drop the book. I was like, oh, if it's gonna be good, crap. So
it's weird. There's another page where they drew Falcon and he's going across two panels vertically, and they just cut him off just above the nose.
Yeah, I noticed that too. I was wondering
that's a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
I feel like no one's mentioned this. I actually liked the backup story in this one.
I didn't read it.
Oh, I didn't read
it. Should. It was. I mean, like some of the ones before haven't been so good, but it's the nomad character, and she's homeless and trying to get by, and that part of it was kind of interesting, and she's, getting picked on at school, blah blah blah.
She doesn't go into.
She doesn't turn tricks. No.
Okay. That's another interesting difference between here. Like, if I was homeless, I wouldn't still be going to school.
There, well, she wants to do good.
Sure, though. Yeah, no, she's a hero. That's
and but basically the story kind of ends up with a can you help me put this couch in my van?
Oh no!
She helped me get this.
No, go in the back. Ted Bundy.
I thought it was a really nice backup story. I think sometimes when Sean McKeever hits, he does a really good job. And he's had enough time to play with this so that he knows what's going on.
Now, the book that everyone probably thought was going to be pick of the week was Batman number 700.
I was positive we were going to pick this.
It was the by far community pick of the week. And this is the 700th issue. Grant Morrison returns to the title with artists Tony Daniel, David Finch, Andy Kubert, and Frank Quietly, and Scott Collins. And the whole thing with the issue is Batman through the years fighting the same criminal involved in the same case unbeknownst to each other. Basically a way of showing the timelessness of Batman by having them all deal with the same problem throughout the years. And I liked the idea more than the execution.
Thank you for saying that, because I mean, like, I was like, what the fuck was this?
That was my thought. So I tried to read it and I found myself wanting to go back to Goodnight Moon. Goodnight.
I got to the pages by Frank Quietly, sort of. And it's like one of those quietly and who's the other what's his name, Scott Collins.
Yeah.
But
somebody,
they don't really
do it. Drawing on an iPad, which sounds. It didn't look like Scott Collins at all.
Yeah.
No. I saw those pages. I was like, oh god, I love Frank Quietly Batman.
Yes.
Like, they're just mild. Even actually, the Tony Daniel stuff looked pretty good, but a completely different way.
Yep.
And he didn't write it, so that's better. But
so the quietly pages were gorgeous.
Yeah, the quietly pages were great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and apparently people out there still really like David Finch. No, his pages weren't that bad in this.
I liked all the art in this except for the Collins stuff. I just felt like, as on the whole, it didn't. I understand what they were trying to do, and I applaud the idea, and it makes sense. And I like the underlying themes of this. The fact that Batman never dies. You know, there'll always be a Batman, and I like the idea of tying it all together with one villain. But at the end of the day, it didn't really work. I thought.
I think from
execution standpoint,
it was too disjointed. It was too disjointed for me.
And this is a perfect example of Morrison. And when people don't like him, and some of the things, because Morrison does everything he does isn't fantastic. And sometimes what he does is he thinks of a really good story and a really good concept, which I think everybody can agree that this is. But he leaves too many holes in between. Like, he doesn't explain quite enough. So you've got to work a little harder for it, I think. And like, so the story's laid out in his head, but he's skipping over and showing you parts of it. And I think that it just took too long at the beginning to figure out what the fuck was happening, I think.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
But there were excellent parts of it. I thought the quietly part was fantastic. And the dialogue, he nails that Dick Damian dynamic.
And that was the best part. But that was just because, like, man, I really love those three issues of Batman and Robin. Like, that's all it really made me think of. And afterwards, I was like, hey, those are the mutants.
Yes,
and I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
But
there was nods to a lot, you know, to tons of eras, and that's what you're supposed to do in a book like this. You're supposed to be happy
Comics
about
Alliance
that.
Comics did a whole breakdown of it. It was like a shitload of stuff.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff in here, and I like the idea that the Batman Beyond is in here too, and I guess they're sort of weaving that into the Batman continuity. And in the cartoon, Batman is Bruce Wayne is his Oracle type of person, and this one looks like they're making it to be Damian, because that makes more sense from a timeline perspective. So
yeah,
I thought
that was neat. I went, ooh, I got excited about that. So
it was good. I mean, I gave it 3 stars. It was, it was okay. It was part fun in parts, but overall, I thought it didn't really meet its expectations.
Yeah, yeah, but Connor, people out there think that you love everything that Grant Morrison and Batman does unabashedly, without being able to judge it. And judge it
individually. Speaking of judging individually, I thought Shield 2 was a big step down from Shield 1.
Interesting.
We call that Hickmaning.
I did not enjoy this nearly as much as I did the first issue.
I thought for a Hickman book, I thought it went really quickly. You know,
really?
Like I felt as if the first one felt more denser, felt more like I was like, oh, this feels a bit more slower. I don't know, not slow, but because I said it went quickly, but less dense.
I thought that actually hurt the book. I felt like it went by. There was too much going on that wasn't being explained.
Yeah.
Oh,
who knows what the hell's going on? Oh, I totally agree with you. Yeah.
I don't want this book to be a success because it's difficult to type.
Yeah.
With the periods. I don't want to have to do that a lot.
Are you still reading this, Josh?
No, I didn't buy it. Okay. I didn't really like the first one.
The first one. That's why I'm surprised.
No.
Yeah.
It looked gorgeous. I still love the art. It's fantastic. Some of these double page spreads, the one with the floating ship with Da Vinci over the city, was just gorgeous. But
I don't feel
like I know what's going on. I don't feel like I know who any of the characters are other than their names.
That's Howard Stark, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
They would know because they don't really tell you. Howard Stark and then Reed's father, but...
Yeah.
I just feel like there's a lot of problems in this issue.
I just recognized it from the mustache. But interesting that it looks like they're using this to build up the Howard Stark character. Especially after seeing the Iron Man movie. Wait a minute.
I mean, I'm still interested in the story. I think the concept's fantastic. I love the idea of these famous scientists and artists involved. But when I finished it, I was like, I didn't feel connected to this at all.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. I was surprised to see the Hickman dialogue page. I didn't think he would go that far in a Marvel book.
He hasn't done it in a Marvel book yet, has he?
Yeah, unless
he's been doing it in the other book, Secret Warriors, which I dropped in the middle, but that's a staple of his indie books.
Yeah, I stopped reading that as well, but I guess the closest thing to that I can remember is the Fantastic Four, you know, the Dragnet page recaps, you know, but I thought that page worked. I got that whole, you know, like I'm glad that wasn't, you know.
No, I like the dialogue pages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
it would be hard to do in a regular page. It'd be a lot of dialogue, but I don't know. It was disappointing, and I feel like this is going to be a running theme, and I didn't mean it to be, and I apologize. But I felt the same way about Hack Slash, My First Maniac number one, which is my first experience with Hack Slash.
Mm-hmm.
It's a book people are always talking to us about trying, and when we interviewed Tim Seeley in one of those conventions we went to this year,
Seattle.
Yes, he actually made it sound really cool, interesting. That was the first time I really was interested in reading it, so I picked this up, and this felt more like an entry in a textbook about this book than it felt like a story.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think the new publisher, then, you know, possibility for a new audience. We've got to bring everybody up to speed. I mean, because there are three omnibuses worth of stories.
And I completely understand why he did it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It totally catches you up on what's been going on, but at the same time, I kind of wanted a story.
Right. There was a lot of text. I thought.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, and at first I was thinking that, but eventually, like a few pages in, I kind of forgot about it because I was interested in it for whatever reason.
Don't get me wrong. I want to pick. I'm gonna get the second issue. I want to see where this goes. Yeah. I think this is a first issue necessity. Yeah. I'm just gonna be looking forward to getting out of the way and getting to a narrative. That's what I'm saying.
What he said was that this was gonna tell the story of her first sort of adventure. I guess not adventure, but it's a story it hasn't actually told before. But I'm guessing this first one, it's totally a catch-up issue. It's like that Invincible issue. But I've never read it before, so it didn't bother me.
Yeah.
I guess. I got the Jenny Frison cover.
Oh, you did?
It's gorgeous.
Yeah, I wanted to get that one, yeah.
It is hell of a cover.
Well, and to be honest, what really kind of bummed me out is that, because I know that Hack Slash is, you know, he's kind of Tim Seeley's kind of baby and everything like that, and I know that he's, you know, he's doing a lot of, he's drawing Wildcats over at Wildstorm, right? He's not writing it. Beechin's writing it. He's just writing Hack Slash, and Daniel Lester did the art. I was hoping to get some Tim Seeley art, you know, like
he doesn't do the art for this.
I didn't know that.
He has for a while.
Damn it. Oh, well.
He did the other cover, basically.
Yeah, the cover.
No,
that's
but
the cover
I
got.
The artist.
I thought it was good.
No, he didn't get paid for this.
Yeah.
You got to go draw the other books. We can write this one.
Yeah.
Come on. You know how it works.
Yeah. And they get a little nitpicky, but the shower scenes with the bruises, those look like leeches.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a little weird.
I don't know what it's like to get beaten to shit by your undead mother.
Yeah, sure. Oh, dude, the smiley face guy in the cornstalk? Creepy.
Yeah, no, it was. I like the concept a lot. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I might even pick up an omnibus, but just as an issue, I wasn't really thrilled by it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the story's been told before about her leaving the family like that, but that was some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Last few pages I thought were the strongest out of the whole thing.
I actually enjoyed that the most, and that was really kind of heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. Like, it's, God.
The first and last page, diary pages by Mark Englert's daughter, I guess, awesome. the little crayon drawings. That was that's a great touch. I don't know. It's like you could I could tell that there's a lot behind this, and I'm curious because I've never read Hexlash either. So like I'm gonna stick with it as well, just because I've heard such good things about it, and I probably will pick up the omnibuses to catch up just to get the whole kind of experience.
Yeah, but I think Image is putting it back out next week. I think, or is it out already?
Yeah,
it's coming out.
I think it's pretty cool that, I mean, regardless of whatever this issue was, like, it's a book that's been around for a while, and you, it's a book you kind of, like, in your heart of hearts, you're like, I want this to succeed for whatever reason, and he's getting this giant bump from being at Image, and, like, that just makes me feel good.
Yeah.
You know, like, that should be that way, damn it.
Yeah, and if you like horror or, you know, those sort of things, you should definitely check out Hexlash if you haven't, because it's
Whoa, what are you, Paul?
I'm sorry?
You don't get that joke because you didn't listen to last week's show.
No, I haven't listened to the show yet. Why? What happened?
You'll have to find out.
All right.
Now, Ron, you've been gone for so long, we haven't had an X-Men report in a while.
Well, no, but here's the deal. I'm going to break a rule. I know I wasn't here last week, and I know I can't really talk about books that came out when you're not here, but I've got to mention the fact that – so I go to the store, and I get my stack of $111 worth of 2 weeks of comics, and in there is Giant Size X-Men Forever, which shipped last week, and then X-Men Forever 2, issue number 1, which shipped this week. Mm. Okay. Now, I don't know why they went back to a number one other than just to do a number one issue. Do you?
Sales.
Sales. But
they have a contract where they have to pay Chris Claremont at least $10,000 every week. And so they just like, do another number one because it's the only way they can make it. He's got a hold over them.
Giant Size X-Men Forever that came out last week, real quick. Art by Mike Grell.
Interesting choice.
Really good. Three pages in, I was like, who did this? I'm like, holy shit, it's Mike Grell.
He's great.
He got the script and was like, what the fuck is this
shit? I know, exactly. It was just like, what? And I never thought I'd ever
see. Did everybody have goatees?
No. But everybody was a lot skinnier, though. But I never thought that I'd ever see Mike Grell doing the X-Men, so that was kind of cool. So,
I kind of want to see that.
Yeah, I'll show it to you. But X-Men Forever 2, number one this week. So the launching of the new volume, where nothing seems to have changed, but this issue was highlighted because it's basically X-Men versus the Avengers, which is kind of fun. It's the Avengers of the old continuity, so you've got White Vision, you know, like the exactly, and Thor with the beard, and
Dr. Druid there.
No, Dr. Druid, and it's just crazy. It's just still crazy after all these issues.
Gilgamesh, any chance?
No, Gilgamesh.
You got Scarlet. Or Black Knight. Black Knight.
But
Black Knight.
Redhead Spider Woman.
Oh right, in the black suit.
Yeah, in the black suit. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Do any of them have slightly different names?
No.
Like the Vision. Like Wonder Man's no longer Simon, he's like Sigmund.
Steve. Did anyone
die?
Nobody died, although in Giant Size X-Men Forever, Xavier had to go to the Shi'ar because I don't want to get into it, but so Xavier kind of died. But it was great. It was just fun to see Claremont writing the Avengers. That was fun too. So I don't know. This book's crazy.
It can't be because of all the Avengers buzz, can it?
No. I think it's just a coincidence.
That's too cynical, right?
I mean, it's way too cynical. Anyway, so X-Men Forever, Volume 2, Number 1. I don't know why, but I love it.
It's because you want to be able to get the X-Men Forever 1 trade all out there so that you can go order that. And if you were to order that, you would go to In-Stock Trades with up to 37% off the cover price, which is a damn good deal if you're looking at the prices on the actual cover, and free shipping of orders over $50 with over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and available for your ordering pleasure, and they list new releases every single Wednesday. If you order, it will probably ship within 48 hours, and that means it won't be that long before it's in your sweaty little hands and you're wondering, why do these characters have different names? Why aren't you called Remy anymore? I don't know.
He's called Remy. It's why isn't he called LeBeau anymore? Why is he Picard?
I forget what it was.
Yeah.
Because he likes Star Trek. He just forgot. It's like they got Peter Parker's name all wrong a lot in the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man. You go to www.instocktrades.com and you can check up on both of those things that I said and see if they're true. And I want to thank them for sponsoring the show.
Cool. So Hexlash was a good jumping on point for that series from Image, but it looks like Chew number 11 from Image was also a good jumping on point.
Was it?
This definitely was a good jumping on. I feel as if it's the beginning of a new arc. They kind of reintroduced, you know, they kind of explained who Tony was and what the whole deal was, and I had a lot of fun with this issue.
I thought this was a great issue. I think this is my pick of the week. It's between this one and Captain America. I gave them both 5 stars. I just had fun reading this. It was just, I don't know. I guess I feel like I haven't read this in a little while. But well, it was nice that they were doing a different thing. He wasn't in some island. They were just
I'll be honest. I didn't like the last arc. I'll be honest with you. I didn't love it. I liked it, but I didn't love it. The tropical island, and although I did like the little twist with the vampire Chibopath, which I thought that's a good idea. But this felt like that first arc again for some reason.
Yeah, and I felt so proud of Tony at the end of this.
Because he got laid?
The last page was just fantastic.
Yeah, it was. That was great.
Well, it was a wonderful page.
Yeah. It was laugh out loud funny at least 3 or 4 points. I mean, this was one of the better issues in a while. I think it was because that last arc wasn't quite as good, but this had a couple of great moments in it.
Yeah, good stuff. So,
don't you disturb a single hair in her head or what? Blam, blam. Oh. Yeah. There you go. Go. He tells everybody else, and they do. it was just a fun issue. This was what's great about Chew right here. And 11 issues later, they can still do it.
Yep, yeah.
Now, Josh, G.I. Joe Corbin number 5, which is the first issue in the new ongoing portion of the...
If you'll remember, they abandoned the other story, which will come back later at some point with Antonio Fuso back on art.
Chuckles, yes.
And this is about the Scientologists.
Or Serpentor.
Or Serpentor, or somehow how they're connected. I don't know how I feel about this. It did have the same feeling of... This doesn't feel like a G.I. Joe book on the one hand, but on the other hand, I don't know if I felt that same. It hasn't hooked me entirely.
The art didn't help.
I don't think the art was that bad.
The art didn't hurt, and it didn't help.
Yeah, I'll go with that.
It was very much the same style of Fuso.
Yeah, I think
but it was not as good.
I think one of the problems with this is that the first 3 or 4 pages, maybe more, was just a guy talking at a desk, and it was a lot of talking.
Yeah.
And so instead of the showing and not telling, they told and told and told. And I just don't know if it's unique enough to do a story where the coil is as basically the Scientologist. That's what this is.
Serpentor is the head of basically the Scientologists.
Yeah. But you know. I'm still very interested to see how they're going to try to tie this in and make it work, because Serpentor is ridiculous. This I command.
Well, didn't the very first dialogue balloon was Corbel? La 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 la. I went no.
That was right. I forgot about that. That's exactly the thing that I was thinking. I was like, if you can make that work, wow.
Yeah, that was the very first piece of dialogue, and I just went no.
They went all out basically. I mean, that's like opening it with like Raptor. Which is a dumb character.
Cobra, la 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 la.
Once a man, I was once a man.
Low point of my life.
Buffoon. Buffoon.
Oh God.
Lies. Lies. I am not a Goon reader. A lot of people are. A lot of people are big fans of the Goon. But I decided to read. I read Buzzard number 1, which is sort of, I guess, an offshoot of Goon. It's from Eric Powell. It's in the Gooniverse. I don't know if that's a real thing, but it should be. And it's funny because it's very different from regular comic books. It's lettered differently. It's got these big panels, but it's really a beautiful book. And I'm not sure what it was about, but I enjoyed it. That may be as much as I'm able to explain right now.
Can you tell us anything about it?
There's this guy, and he's the Buzzard, and he's just a crabby old mean man, and he rides into like – he gets like this skeletonized horse, and he rides into a town, and somebody tries to give him shit, and so he cuts their heads off, and people are like, oh my God, you killed them. They were demons, and you're death, and I'm not sure, but I liked the tone. I thought it was fun. And then the backup story was – remember there was that Weird Western Tales kind of with – Billy the Kid. Billy the Kid's
all time oddities. Yep. We're getting more. Yeah, we're getting more.
It's backup story of that. So that was fun.
Yeah.
It was good. If you've been curious about the Goon, this might be something fun to try.
Pal takes these little diversions, mm-hmm. which I think especially with a creator who is so identified with a creator on property like the Goon, and then he takes these little diversions of like the Billy the Kid thing or this or the Satan sodomy baby, like these just crazy ideas that he has, and he takes a couple of months and works on them, and I think that's a good way to I think that's how he keeps himself fresh for the Goon.
You know, it's got one of those things where. I think like when you read Hellboy for the first time, you can't really tell what's so great about it, but There's something about it that's different, that has its own, like the art has this, his art is really good, but it's hard to explain why necessarily. And a tone, it has a tone that's completely unique, much in the same way that Hellboy is. And I think that once you get to recognize those things, you could easily get into it. So
cool. So Uncanny X-Men number 525 is the 10th chapter and the first chapter of Act 3 of Second Coming, which I'm going to go on which I'm going to go on record and say is the best thing that Marvel is doing right now, the Second Coming storyline. Admittedly, if you're an X-Men fan, if you're not an X-Men fan, you don't really care, but I read a lot of Marvel books, and this was the first thing I read this week, and it delivered so much so on every angle. Dodson, this probably is the best X-Men Dodson art that I've seen since he started doing the X-Men.
Don't get cheap on me now, Dodson.
We got Dodson. Connor, you might remember in Chicago at C2E2, I actually stopped at his table and I looked at pages and I was ready to buy. I'm going to buy an X-Men page. And yeah. I didn't find anything I liked. There were three or four pages in here that I'm like, I want to contact him to be like, how much is that page?
I thought also you couldn't take out a mortgage in time.
Yeah, exactly. They were pretty expensive. But the art in this was just spectacular. And Fraction nailed his portion of this, the Fantastic Four and the Avengers have shown up and they're working with the X Club to try to figure out what the dome that's around San Francisco now is. And while Cyclops and Emma are pulling together their troops to keep everyone alive and the battle has begun. And meanwhile, the X-Force and Cable have gone into the future. And, the X-Men have introduced a lot of alternate futures and things like that. And it could be said they're going to the well, but I think it was a wise choice to have them show up in the future. And you get a two-page spread of all the headshots and the word slain over it and the suggestion that they're in the days of future past future. Because we haven't been there in years. I don't think they've revisited this area in ages. And so as soon as I got turned to that two-double-page spread, I just went, oh, damn. I love when they get into the time travel stuff, and I just have no idea how this is going to end. I can't wait for the next issue. So they're doing an X-Men crossover right, like I've said every time every issue has come out, but this one has been the one where I was like, yeah, this is fun.
So we're going to have to really see.
It's chapter 10.
How many is it going to go?
13.
Okay.
Sorry, 14. 14.
All right.
So
it's really going to be about how it ends.
I'm sorry?
Going to really be about how it ends.
Oh yeah, totally. I've no, and especially considering that we know that this vampire stuff is coming, and I know that people are surviving, and that's what sucks about the solicitations is that I have no insight as to the whole Messiah Hope girl, how that's going to end. And she had a little flare up of anger in the beginning of the issue, and her eyes went red like Cyclops's. So.
Uh-oh.
Interesting. But uh-oh. Despite my love for Uncanny X-Men number 525, my pick of the week probably was Cowboy Ninja Viking number 6.
Those are three words that have nothing to do with one another.
Because I love this book. This book is so much fun.
There's a trade out. I'm going to get it.
Yeah, the trade is out, and I didn't know how they were going to – because it was originally supposed to be a miniseries, and then because it was such a success that's now an extended series and another issue that you could pick – if you're curious about it, you can jump on with this issue because it's the beginning of a new arc, and I didn't know whether they were going to be able to extend the concept into – much like Chew – into another arc, and halfway through the first this issue, I was like, oh, yeah, it's going to keep going, and it's fun. It's just wacky, fun. It's got a little violence. It's got a little espionage intrigue. And it's got the whole, kind of mental idea of these characters with three personalities. And it just cracks me up. The little subtle use of the word balloons to identify the personalities is just genius. And it just works so well. And every time they introduce a new character with new personalities, like this one, there's a mafia guy who was fairly prominent, which is funny. So I just love it. It was great. So.
I decided, for some reason, I can't entirely tell you, to read James Patterson's Murder of King Tut number 1 from IDW. I think it's IDW. And what this is, an adaptation of a James Patterson book, I assume. James Patterson is the Burger King of novelists, I suppose.
He sells a lot of books.
Yes, he does. I don't know if he's good or bad or whatever. Doesn't matter.
Don't matter. He sells a lot of books.
Does a lot of books, man.
It moves units.
It's all about moving units. You should know this. Anyways, this is sort of a parallel story of the ascension of King Tut told in his time, and at the same time, the story of the guy who uncovered, I forget his name, the guy who uncovered Tut's tomb in the early 1900s. I found it really interesting. Egypt, his historical period is pretty interesting, and it was It was fun. It wasn't the greatest art in the world. Half of it was done by Christopher Mitten, who did Wastelands pretty good. The other half by somebody else, I forget. I had fun reading it, though. I was like, oh, pretty interesting. So it's a good little...
Wait, you didn't know the name of the guy who found the tomb?
Howard something.
It was Bob something. Bob the Sentry.
Bob the Sentry? Yes. Oh, shit.
He found the tomb.
Didn't he go... Everything is getting retconned.
Yes. He was there, too.
Bob the Sentry.
He's on the grassy knoll as well.
Wow. Wow. Finally, in a story of huge brass balls, giant stainless steel balls, yet another person has said to Wildstorm, yes, I will write in Alan Moore's stead. That's fine. And they released Tom Strong and the Robots of Doom, number one, written by Peter Hogan, who we can only assume is related to Paul Hogan, Crocodile Dundee, because he would have a big knife and not be afraid of alligators. And this was, I never read all of Tom Strong, I realized, when I started this. So if there was something that I needed to know, I didn't know it, because I've only read that first volume. They helped to have Chris Sprouse and Carl Story and Todd Klein on art, inks, and letters, which are all the original people who are on it. So it looked exactly like old Tom Strong, which does not help, because old Tom Strong looks fantastic.
Well, it does not hurt, right?
That's what I meant to say if I didn't say that.
I picked this up purely based off of the Chris Sprouse art that we saw recently, and just because I wanted more Chris Sprouse. And I forgot about the oversized lettering, and I love it. I love the look of this book.
It's a beautiful-looking book. And so it immediately feels exactly like the old one. And I will go so far as to say, like, at first I was like, this dialogue is not as good as Alan Moore's. And for the first few pages, that was the case. Especially like the gorilla. I forget the gorilla's name, but I was like, that's not quite right. It was a little off. But as I got into it, it's a really good story. Like, the concept is really good. It's a time traveling thing with the Nazis and the sexy Nazi lady and the illegitimate son and the
she's gonna
Nazis.
Fall in a crevasse.
I thought it was pretty good. It didn't, it's not Alan Moore. It doesn't. The dialogue does not have the panache, and you can tell immediately. But it was fun. I have no problem with this. And this is just they're just warming us up for when they redo Watchmen. That's all that's happening here. This is just softening the blow.
Will Watchmen be in the Wildstorm universe?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
V for Vendetta's next.
We'll move units.
Includes inventory.
Jesus. So those are the books that came out that we found interesting. But if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see the whole pull list of every the whole list of every books that are coming out. You can add it to your pull list. Come back, rate, and review them after you read them on Wednesday. And a couple of you reviewed some other books. Our first one comes from user Fraggle Uprising, who reviewed Batgirl number 11 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And at the time of this recording, 0.43% of you made it your pick of the week. And Fraggle Uprising, I love that username, says, there's a wonderful tone to Batgirl that brings me back every week. There's a line this book walks between being dark and funny that it manages to pull off week in and week out. It's this mixture that allows the opening sequence to work and have an emotive impact. There manages to be both jokes and genuine character beats, with each allowing room for action in each issue. Now, I haven't heard about Batgirl in a while. Connor, you were really high on it when the series started. Are you still high on it?
Yes. Okay. It's great. Now that Power Girl is nominally over, Batgirl's the best heroine in DC right now.
Interesting.
She's funny. She's relatable. She's got that Spider-Man-esque quality of she's a regular person in a suit trying to make the best of it. Yeah. And you really root for her because she jokes about her. It's not a ripoff, but she jokes about her shortcomings as a hero, and it's just a very charming character and a very charming book. This team of Brian Q. Miller and Lee Garbett on art is fantastic, and one of the best Bat books right now.
Cool.
I know from Twitter that Lee Garbett likes Jaws.
So he's okay in your book then.
Yes, he is. Smile, you son of a bitch.
We're gonna go with Sakua. He reviewed, or she reviewed, Justice League Generation Lost number 3. Give a story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. And the time of recording, 0.09% of the iFan base made this their pick of the week. And Sakua says, "There's nothing in this issue that packs a punch quite like Booster finding out how the world thinks Ted died in the last issue. The closest we get is Max screwing with B's head at Checkmate, which is effectively unnerving scene. Overall, though, the whole JLI gets dismissed in attack cycle that's been relentlessly dominating the series so far is getting exhausting fast. The art is Fine. There are a few awkward panels, and Daganino still can't draw Max's face for some reason, but overall it's fine. Neo Max looks suitably menacing. The cover is absolutely fantastic. The cover's by Tony Harris. Yeah. It was good.
I'm trying with this issue, man. I'm trying.
I love this. This book's been fantastic the whole way through.
Yeah, I'm trying. It's not grabbing me.
It's not going to, dude.
Yeah. Thing is, the thing is, I love the JLI characters. I mean, I do.
Is this Giffen? Is he doing it?
No, it's Winnick writing and Giffen doing breakdowns.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's the 52 holes.
You get the feeling that Keith Giffen figured out this keyhole in the system where he's like, yeah, I'll do breakdowns. He can make a living by that, but it's like it's not very hard for him at all.
Yeah, I think
he works like an hour a day. And he's like, yeah, breakdowns. Like that's like his like thing he figured out.
Well, he deserves it, but
vaudeville.
We were doing vaudeville. Oh, that will never not be funny.
You people, you don't understand. I don't know how many people listening have been around for a long time, but our first New York Comic-Con show, Comic-Con. Anyway, Keith Giffen goes, we were doing vaudeville. We say that at least twice a week.
To this day. Anytime we try to explain anything we're doing, it's we were doing vaudeville.
You don't understand. It wasn't good. It wasn't funny. We were doing vaudeville.
And he's getting more and more menchy as it goes on.
I don't even want to see the original clip because it'll be boring. Yeah. But
anyway, but I'm trying. It's not great, but I'm not surprised you like it though. Kind
of. I love the concept that Maxwell Lord used his powers to make the world forget he existed, except for the four JLIers.
Yeah,
and that they're running through their gambit of their old teammates. I really think it's a love letter to the old book, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah. All right. Good. Good for you then. Go to ifanboy.com/comics, do your pull list, and write your reviews. You can get on a future show. And if you like iFanboy, if you like what we do, you like this podcast, you like our video show, you like all the writing on the website, there are ways you can help to keep us around. You might be finding you might wonder, you know, how can I help, you know, help these guys, or how can I make sure iFanboy stays around? One of the key things you can do is click on the banners on the website. A lot of those banners are by advertisers who are advertising products they think you're interested in. So just click on them. Help us out. Go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, which is the easiest way that you can help out iFanboy and get something in return. We all shop on Amazon. You can get your comics, your books, your DVDs, your video games, your clothes, your contraceptives, whatever you need inside Amazon. And if you go to ifanboy.com, I'm not wrong at all. If you go to ifanboy.com/Amazon, buy anything from there or click on the Amazon link to go to Amazon proper, you help us out in the process. So we really appreciate it. We got t-shirts. We still got some Fury Agent t-shirts left. You can order them while you can. You can find those at ifanboy.com/store in the iFanboy store, and that's where you can also sign up for a membership. You can sign up for $4 a month or $42 a year, and that gets you some stickers, a comic from our collection, some pins, and a little grab bag of fun iFanboy stuff. Or if you got a little more money, you can spend $10 a month or $100 a year, and that gets you all that fun stuff plus an exclusive iFanboy t-shirt. And iFanboy members are the ones who are eligible for the awesome giveaways, and we'll be talking later in the show about the winners of the Fandango giveaway and telling you about our next comic book giveaway, which is going to be revealed next week, I think. So go to ifanboy.com/store, sign up, become a member today. And we thank the members who exist currently. We love you.
If you like what we do, it's because we're doing vaudeville.
We were doing vaudeville.
We were all doing vaudeville. Did you know I like my Fear Agent shirt?
Speaking of vaudeville.
Well, you know what? We normally do this really late, but for once we're actually on time.
Woo-hoo!
It's Hold book on, of the month time. I was actually, Ron was reading the copy. I was fiddling with how I was going to keep it on my lap. I don't have room.
I can't see the screen if I'm going to look at it.
Dude, listen, you guys didn't have to bring it home on the bus. That's all I'm saying. There was no elegant way to carry this book home on the bus.
I had to bring home that Calvin and Hobbes trilogy thing that we bought for Connor on the subway.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
I still hurt.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what we're talking about Wednesday Comics, the hardcover edition, which just came out. This is iFanboy's book of the month for June.
The glorious Wednesday Comics.
I told the story in my review. I had another book all lined up, and then Josh and Ron got their copies, and they immediately said, we have to do something about this book. We can't not acknowledge this book. It's amazing. And I said, sorry, I've already picked the book of the month. And then it arrived, and I wrote them an email that said, fuck, this is the book of the month. I mean, there's no way to look at this book and not think this is one of the greatest things we've ever seen. It is a love letter to comics. This whole project was a love letter to comics, but this collection enhances everything about the original project.
Well, I think it's so funny because when it came out last year and it was coming out like in, you know, the Wednesday Comics really came out in the oversized newsprint. It was all folded and it was this interesting experiment, and it was weekly and it just blew our socks off with nearly every issue. And the question at the end of it was, how are they going to collect this?
Mm-hmm. Well, what they did was they put it, the original was on newsprint, like Ron said, but this is on nice white art paper, and it really, it makes this art look gorgeous. I mean, this is...
Now, I said this at the time. I said, the problem with this is it's fun, it's kitschy and everything, but it's not doing any favors for the art.
Yeah. Sure.
The printing process, that paper, all that stuff, big deal. Like, all you get this, and I've opened it up, and I was just like, damn.
Yep.
And then
you
I had
say that with almost every page, and that's the thing about this project is it was full of great writers, but really it was about the art. This is a, like a 17-inch high book, and it's got Joe Kubert, and it's got Mike Allred, and it's got Carl Kerschel, and it's got Joe Quijones, and it's got
Paul Pope,
and just a myriad of talent, super talented guys, Amanda Connor and Lee Bermihu and Ryan Sook and Stelfreeze and Kyle Baker, and it is a gorgeous book.
Yeah,
I tell you something. We are proponents of digital comics. We work for a digital comics company.
We're
you know,
proud.
We've all been for it. Right here, this is why digital comics are not going to take over entirely.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, this is the example of why those two things can exist in a world together. Because
yes.
Because while you know it's going to be great to read comics on an iPad or a device like that or things like that, getting this big hunkin' book on your shelf and pulling it out and showing somebody the Carl Kerschel's Flash or Paul Pope, that panel of Adam Strange taking off by Paul Pope, it's awe inspiring, you know, and I think that they, like you said, it's a love letter to comics. They did not do a disservice to this collection. It's perfect. It's nearly perfect.
And it's everything from the cover to the inside cover to every page on this is purpose and design.
Yep.
There's not a wasted inch of this book. It is,
well, the Wonder Woman story.
But I said in my review, even the stories that didn't work in the paper, like Wonder Woman and Teen Titans, still look better.
Yeah.
And there's still inherent problems in Wonder Woman in that there's too many panels and they didn't really understand the format. But
and the Titans.
It still looked better. And Titans, the problem with Titans was the panel-to-panel progression storytelling because the artist wasn't a comic artist. But this just means you get a better look at his design, which is great.
Yeah.
Everything about this was better. Rereading was fantastic. They bunched all the stories together so you don't have to read them page by page. You can read them all in one go.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing where if you didn't buy the issues, get this so you can get the experience of what we got with the issues. If you bought the issues, still get it because it's a better collection. Lord knows it's a lot easier than pulling out those issues.
upon rereading it, I was doubly impressed with the Kamandi story.
The Kamandi story is amazing. Oh, it's great.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't say that often about comic art. Comic art is fantastic.
I say it a lot.
No, I mean, like, this is beautiful. There's beauty in these pages.
That was Ryan Sook, right?
Yeah.
Damn, I wish he'd do an interior book. Like, do it a monthly with interiors again. That would be so great. Oh, man.
Here's a question. How many pictures of Joe Kubert drawing Sergeant Rock getting the shit beaten out of him while he sits in a chair can I take? And the answer is a lot. Because every time I'm like, oh, that looks great. Oh, it's the same thing. That looks great. That Nazi's an asshole.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. It's like almost like you didn't even need to write a review for this book. I mean, this book is like, it was like you said, once you see it, it was like, oh, it's a no-brainer. You know, like
it really was. I opened the packaging and I looked at it and I went, oh, fuck, it's going to be the book of the month.
Yeah, so.
It was just gorgeous. It was gorgeous. And then there's backup material where every artist shows off some of their sketches and their layouts, and you see the alternate logos from Ryan Hughes, the designer, and you get a little story from Mark Chiarello. The editor really was the man behind this whole project, and you get to find out how it came to be. And just a great collection. This is one of the best collections I've seen in a long time.
That's the great thing about it is that all that bonus stuff. And also, you go to Amazon, it's $30. Like, yep. This thing is $30. It's worth so much more than that. So, yeah. Definitely.
And if you have prowlers,
yeah, you can use it as a weapon.
One good whack with this thing.
I seriously, I'm carrying it under my arm onto the bus, and when you get on the bus, you make the left turn to go down the aisle. I hit somebody, then I hit somebody again, and then I sat down in the seat. And I'm like, I'm gonna read it. And I pulled it out and like.
Now, to be honest, it is difficult to store.
Yes, impossible.
I have it horizontally on top of some books on my shelf. Yeah.
My shelves are bisected. They don't fit that way.
Yeah.
I figured it fits in one of my desk drawers. I have to put it on top of everything.
Yeah.
And no, I'm not going to keep it on my coffee table. I have a 4-month-old. How long do you think
and
that's
a dog.
Gonna...
The dog's probably the bigger problem.
Get on the coffee table. He's very short. He's very well behaved.
What do you know when you're not around?
Anyway,
I'm
so
always around.
Go to ifanboy.com and you can read Connor's great review of it. And seriously, whether you're a DC fan or not, this book is worth checking out. So
if you're a comic art fan or just a comic in general, it's fantastic.
All right, on to the emails. Our first email comes from Sean, Infectious Funk, on ifanboy.com. And Sean asks, a few months ago, you got the question, are you more excited about DC or Marvel right now? And the consensus was that DC was creatively on top. At the time, I thought so too, but I think the pendulum has swung back to Marvel. DC books seem to have lost their way. Since Sinestro Corps War, characterization has taken a backseat to nonstop plot in Green Lantern. The Superman family took a big chance by going weekly and engaging in a massive crossover story. But since John's left New Krypton, the books really fell apart. Batman and Robin has been great, along with Red Robin. The return of Bruce Wayne has no stakes. I'll see him in 6 months. Wake me when it's over. The Flash, for some reason, I just don't care about. Marvel, on the other hand, is knocking them out of the park with their Cosmic series. Siege was awesome. I'm pumped all around for the line of Avenger books. I even like Second Coming. What do you guys think? Has this pendulum swung and put Marvel back on top? If so, what happened to DC? Why did they drop the ball? Why do we always have to pit these two against each other?
Well, why is it like, it's over, now what? Like, give it a minute, dude.
Well, but that said, I do agree with him. I think the pendulum has swung and Marvel's more interesting right now.
I think you need to take a breath. Because
I think Marvel just got interesting again. It doesn't mean the other one has to diminish.
They're both at a restart point, sort of. Not restart, but they're both sort of taking a breath and then taking a different step in a direction.
Yeah.
We don't know where they're going to end up. I will tell you that for both of them, I've stepped back from both of them considerably, and I'm looking at other things.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm talking to you about, you know, the King Tut book, because I feel like there's 19 Avengers books and there's all this other stuff, and I just, like, it's one of those times where I'm like, okay, let them do their thing for a little while. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd say one's better than the other. But I do think you're right that Marvel is retrenched a little.
Yeah, Marvel definitely stepped more. Marvel was wavering about a year ago. And they're pulling it off with, like I said, I think Second Coming is the best thing in a while. I think they're pulling off the Heroic Age launch. All the books have a common feel, that sunnier, you know, like the sun is shining again kind of moment. And it's just like, I'm excited about Marvel, whereas for, you know, like, you know, a year ago, I was excited about DC. I think that's just the natural ebb and flow of things, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know, personally. Connor, what do you think?
I think Marvel has gotten better.
Yeah.
I don't think DC's gotten any worse. I just think they're both good now.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, because one gets better doesn't mean the other has to get, you know, worse.
It sure is a damn good time to be a comic reader, though.
And we would disagree with something. We like Flash.
Yeah, I agree. I like Flash.
I like Return of Bruce Wayne. I think it's really good. I like, you know, I mean, the books he doesn't like, I like, so I don't think they're bad.
Yeah.
The thing about Return of Bruce Wayne, he says Return of Bruce Wayne has no stakes.
Yeah.
You're missing the point, I think, because the point is a little about the journey. I think those two issues that we've read so far have been, A, art explosions, like really, really nice art, and two, you know, imagination, and it's just really... I don't know. I think the journey on those are really good. Like, you know where it ends up, but that's so not the point, I don't think.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think... I mean...
If you're going to reading the story to get to the point, you're never going to like any story, because the whole point of the story is what the journey to the end.
Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. And the thing is, like I said, like, I've been on this rant about how there are no surprises left. I'm not expecting to be surprised, and it's all about the journey and how you get there. You know, and I think you still want, you know, especially with Green Lantern and what's going on with X-Men, you still want some stakes. You still want some, you know, things to matter. But it's just a different kind of thing. You got to be ready to go with the journey, because that's what we're going to be raving about in, you know, when the trades come out, when the collections come out, is how great this story was. So
yeah.
So I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I think it's interesting that we, like I said, we're in a good. It's a good time to be a comic fan. It's also interesting. This is one of those we've gone. San Diego is like kind of the lynch, you know, like the keystone of the year of the comic year. Like, we get to halfway through the year, we assess what's going on, and this is a rare year as we're getting ready for San Diego coming up, that there's no big earth shattering event from either of the two companies.
As a person who runs a comic book website, yes, that's true. Because there ain't shit going on right now.
A little bit of crickets.
There's a new Chew arc. Great, thanks.
Well, no, I mean, then the Heroic Age is a big deal for, you know, for Marvel, but like, but that it's not exactly. It's just the books coming out. So I mean, it'll be really curious to see what gets pushed at San Diego and what the summer looks like.
Wasn't July the big month for Marvel, or is it June? Are we in it now?
I can't remember. Yeah.
Well, we'll find out. All right, our next email. Let's get this train rolling. Joseph C. from Cedar Park, Texas. He's got a lot to say, so let's get through this. I don't know about you, but I tend to find it a little annoying when ongoing comics have a plot that jump into the future. I'm not talking about stories that take place in the future like Legion of Superheroes or Time Travelers like Booster Gold or Cable. What I'm referring to is comics that are part of an ongoing series like Wolverine, Old Man Logan, and the current JSA arc. Now, I'm not saying Old Man Logan was a bad comic, but I felt it would have been better as a standalone title like Batman The Dark Knight Returns or Spider-Man Reign, rather than part of the ongoing title, but that's me being nitpicky. JSA, however, is a different story. If you haven't been reading it, long story short, Willingham is the JSA attacked by the Third Reich, a few heroes die, then jumps years into the future where the Reich rules all of America and all heroes have no power and are placed in a concentration camp. My problem with this is that it doesn't matter what Willingham does. He can't kill off anyone he wants and do whatever, and it will not matter. Since they have this as part of the ongoing series, it's all going to go back to normal by some BS deus ex machina, because you can't have this comic killing Alan Scott, Batman, Joker, Blue Beetle, and going on from there. So it just doesn't matter. I get that. But then what's the point of putting it into the print? Again, I feel like it just would have been fared better as a miniseries rather than part of the ongoing storyline. That way Willingham won't have to tie it all up back in the status quo with the deus ex machina. Not only that, but if anything, it seems more like just starting time for whatever Robinson's startling... That sentence doesn't make sense. We'll skip that one. Stalling time for whatever Robinson has planned for JLA and JSA. Anyway, sorry about the rant, but I would like to know how you feel about arcs in ongoing series that just randomly jump into the future for something that doesn't matter in the long run.
Well, again, this is the journey.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Similar theme. I mean, it's interesting because I do agree with him that I didn't like that Old Man Logan existed in the Wolverine story, in the Wolverine title. But they fucked up Wolverine title so like seven different ways from Tuesday.
What does it matter?
Right. But no. But that, yes. I'm a continuity nerd. But that said, though, I love time travel. I'm a huge. I mean, look at the X-Men and look at how many times they've gone into the future for a couple of issues and things like that. The thing is that the Age of Apocalypse diversion type thing. And while that was in the future, it was an alternate timeline, and everything went back to normal. Yeah, you're right, but it was so much fun.
That's the whole point.
Didn't that used to be the norm?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, like there weren't spin-off, you know, in the 60s and 70s. There was just the title.
Yeah.
And so when they did something wacky, it took place in the title. This is no different than ever. You've just gotten conditioned for a different kind of thing. And I think that getting stuck on the, well, what does it matter? What's going to happen? Like, don't make it matter, and it won't.
Right.
Like, you know that Batman's not going to die in a story anyway. So, you know, the good guys are going to win. That's like the deal. And the fact is, even if they did kill somebody, you would say, oh, it doesn't matter either. So stop worrying about that stuff. Like, read the story for its own. You don't actually know what's going to happen, even if you think you do.
Yeah, judge the story in the merits. Obviously, Willingham's, I mean, as evidenced by Fables, Willingham's a good writer. You know, he's not doing it just, you know.
Jesus, stop the presses.
Well, no, but I mean, no, be honest. I mean, like, he's won awards and stuff. All nitpicking and joking aside, I can acknowledge the guy knows what he's doing. He's not going, shit, 22 pages, fuck. All right, Third Reich Nazis, yeah, we'll do that, yeah. And, like,
awesome, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I kind of want to go back and read it.
It sounds exactly like Tom Strong also.
But, I mean, like, he's not stalling for something Robinson's doing. And admittedly, we've seen that, like, there's been some questionable decisions with the Justice League book. And, you know, it's been a rocky couple of years. But those are more editorial problems. Like, it's not because Willingham's a bad writer. Like, he has a story to tell.
I just don't understand what people are looking for in their comics.
Yeah.
I mean, are you looking for a good story? Or what? Are you just looking to read a continuity?
Something that matters. Right. Whatever that means. I think that it's really important. And I've been guilty of this myself. You need to forget what the cover says. You need to forget the title on the cover. You need to forget the number on the cover. And however that's dressed up, fold that freaking cover back and just read the story.
I disagree with that, but that's me. So.
Yeah, but really.
It
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the cover says.
At the end of the day, like, think about it like a trade paperback. You don't know what it is. It's a story that you can read.
Yep.
It's all it is. Because none of it matters. Matter. What's matter mean?
What is matter? All right. So if you've got a question, if you want to question what matter means, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. We talked about the book of the month, so we're going to skip the voicemails this week. But call in to get into next week's show at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Yeah. And so as we mentioned earlier, we're going to be doing some giveaways, and we've been giving away two free gift cards worth $25 a piece from Fandango to go see – if you want to go see a movie, you get the limited edition Iron Man 2 gift card, which you can keep after you use. That's pretty cool. So we want to congratulate our winners, Sam Conti and Joseph Trahan. who won the gift cards. So congratulations. You'll be getting those in the mail soon. So go have a good time at the movies.
And membership has its privileges.
And stay tuned. Go to ifanboy.com where you can get a glimpse at our next giveaway, which is the Dynamo 5 giveaway, where we're going to be giving away 4 trade paperbacks and the first issue of the upcoming Dynamo 5 issue, all signed by writer Jay Ferber. We're going to be giving away 2 sets of that, I believe. And we're going to be giving that away on June 21st on iFanboy Don't Miss. So you got to go listen to the iFanboy Don't Miss podcast to hear if you won.
Ron, I would like to win that one.
You're not eligible.
Ron, I would like to win that one.
Oh, all right, we'll talk later.
Like Iron Man 2 update. I have not seen it yet still.
Too bad you didn't win the gift card.
Iron Man 2 week 3. It's just like Nightline when the Iran hostages were.
I don't have $12.
So we've got lots of other shows besides this one. We have this past week we had a Booksplode where Josh and Jim and Tom Caters talked about Invincible Iron Man and Omnibus Volume 1. So you can look for that back in the feed. I have not listened to it yet, but I'm sure it was funny.
It wasn't that funny.
Okay.
That's what everyone knows. Everyone thinks Tom Caters is always funny. He's actually
no. Jim and Josh and Tom—they're all funny guys.
Yeah, we were talking about the book.
Yeah.
The end. I got kind of tired. That was a little funny.
You didn't get tired. You don't get tired.
Yeah.
We do special edition podcasts when movies come out. Next week, you can look forward to a Jonah Hex podcast for the Jonah Hex film. And this past week, maybe there was an A-Team podcast.
Maybe.
We don't know at the time of recording if we're going to do one or not, so possibly.
We'll see what we think of the movie.
You can look for that in the feed. If you don't see it, it's because we didn't do it.
Yep. And you realize now if we don't do it, everyone's going to moan that we didn't do it. But still.
Well, you can do it late. It's not like it matters.
Yeah. Anyway,
sorry, everyone. You shouldn't have heard that. These mooks don't care. We're doing vaudeville.
Josh, what else do we do? Every week.
We do the Don't Miss podcast every Monday. That is a show you have to subscribe to separately. So if you haven't been getting it and wonder why, that's why. Search for iFanboy Don't Miss. And what it is, a little short show where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming out that Wednesday, something that's either a good jumping on point or something that's new, something you may not have heard of, things like that. This week, we are very likely...
Last week, we talked to Tim Seeley about Hack Slash, which is pretty
cool. That's true.
Yeah.
And that worked out well because that's why I bought it. It worked for me.
Yeah.
This week, I know... I'm pretty sure. I'm going to go ahead and say it because that'll make it happen.
All right.
I'm talking to Jen Van Meter about, I forget the title, a Black Cat number one.
Amazing Spider-Man Presents Black Cat number one.
Yeah, that's it. It's long. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, that Jen Van Meter is Greg Rucka's wife, but she's a writer of her own accomplishments.
She did Hopeless Savages. She
yeah, she did.
Awesome.
Was,
yeah. So, cool. So listen to Don't Miss for that. And Connor, you have a little special announcement?
I have a special announcement. Ron Buckman from Fraser, Michigan. Happy birthday. It's his birthday this week.
On June 17th, I believe. An early birthday wish.
So Ron Fraser, happy birthday.
Yeah. Do we get paid for this? What the hell?
Courtesy of your girlfriend, Kayla.
Yes. So,
how much did she pay? Oh.
You can thank her.
So we do this now, huh? We do birthday shout-outs.
We do this now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
If you ask nice enough.
Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. A birthday request in from Ron from Fraser, Michigan. We're going to play Phil Collins. Let's go out to it now.
You know the sad thing is? Ron's in high school. He doesn't know what that means.
I know, exactly.
He has no idea what that joke means.
It sounded like Shaggy. I don't know what it was. It was...
He did sound like Shaggy. That's why it works.
Well, he was Shaggy.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, man, now I want to listen to the outtake. You do this to me every goddamn time. When you come in from an upbeat number and I got to do it to a fucking dog dying.
I don't know what's better, that or drunken Harlan Sanders. Or angry drunk Orson Welles.
Oh no! My favorite is angry Earl Weaver, which you never heard, Josh, but Connor, you might have heard when Earl Weaver was answering questions on the radio, and he just goes in this tirade of like cursing. It's like that motherfucking cocksucker's gonna go out there and hit the ball out of the park. Like it's. I can't believe I just said cocksucker on our podcast. I'm sorry.
That can't be a first.
Yeah. Oh man! Well, happy birthday, Ron. We hope you appreciate it. So.
I'm your namesake. Yeah. You can check out iFanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review, and you can read my Book of the Month review, because really, it's all about me. All the in-depth discussion is happening every day. It's all about me, Josh. All the important news, discussion topics, stuff going on every day. We've been putting up tons of material. Check it out. lots of things going on. You can check out Word Balloon every week. Word Balloon's there from John Suntress, great interview show. And you can check out ifanboy.com/about for our social network links. Be our friends on Facebook and Twitter mostly. But any of the other ones we'll probably also acknowledge. We also do a video show every Wednesday. This past week we talked about Blackest Night. And this coming week we're talking about Jonah Hex.
Woohoo.
For the
how timely.
There's lots of face flap jokes.
If you have a face flap joke, you can email us at contact@ifanboy or call in with your face flap. Fanboy. I don't know how he talks. 326-2697. If you have any questions, keep it short. Tell us where you're coming from. Don't blather on forever. Come on.
And if you like what we're doing, go to iTunes, write a review, help spread the word, let people know. Go to your comic book store, tell them about iFanboy. Let you know more and more people. A lot of people are discovering iFanboy for the first time. Go to the website, check it out, show it to your coworker, show it to your mom, whatever. We appreciate everyone who helps spread the word. So it's good to be back. It was a fun show.
Who's off next week?
Yeah, we'll see what happens next week. Who's the pick next week?
No, who's off next week?
Who's off? Oh, who's on vacation next? No more vacations. This is now begins the long, hot road to San Diego, my friends.
And you guys like it when it gets hot, don't you? I think Matthew McConaughey should have played Jonah Hex.
That would have been awesome.
I looked at like a thing about Reign of Fire and I was like, oh.
You know what? You're not wrong.
Awesome.
Yeah.
No, it would have been awesome. Yeah. Not that Big Head Tiny Shoulders isn't good for it, but.
All right. Until next week, I'm Ron.
You could beat your ass, Josh. I'm Connor.
Giant head, maybe. You just whack it into me. And then I would grab his tiny shoulders by keeping my hands very close together, and I would shake it back and forth because his head would have a lot of momentum like a giant baby.
Anarchist. We're up to our long-distance dedication, and this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. This is a last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.